This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
...of a science is highly related to what is being studied. So those who study something that is trivial are not like those who study quantum mechanics or nuclear science. And therefore, if you look at the most important, the most valuable, the most precious, the most honorable thing, you will not find any other than Allah, the Almighty. So the knowledge of Allah Azza wa Jal, the science that leads you to know Allah Azza wa Jal, is by far the most important, the most noble. It is by far the greatest science a Muslim could acquire. And not only Muslims need to know this, by the way, even the non-Muslims, even the disbelievers, they need to know this science and they need to understand it because they suffer from this void in their chests. They suffer from this emptiness. They suffer from so many illnesses that cannot be filled except with the knowledge of Allah Azza wa Jal, except with the answers to the questions that lingers and are frequently asked without any proper answer. This is why they are disbelievers. Who created us? Why did He create us? When did He create us? And what is needed from us to fulfill the purpose He created us for? And finally, then what? After we finish our sentence on earth, then what? These questions and many more, they tend to create the void and emptiness in disbelievers' chests. Whereas youngsters, children among the Muslims have the answer to all of these questions with the grace of Allah Azza wa Jal. Now, when I say that even the disbelievers would benefit from this science, what science? Again, the beautiful names and attributes of Allah, the science of knowing Allah's Azza wa Jal's names and attributes. Even the disbeliever would benefit because each and every human being was born upon the fitrah, upon the human nature which Allah has had created all humans upon. And what is that human nature? To believe in the oneness of Allah, to worship Him, to be submissive to Him, to feel enslaved in His service. This is what each and every individual of us, regardless of our ethnic upbringing, our religious commitment, our denomination, it doesn't matter. Every single human being and every single jinn as well were born to believe in the oneness of Allah and to feel the urge to worship Him subhanahu wa ta'ala. As we grow up, our parents change our inclinations, the environment, the country, the surroundings. So, all in all, these things make us lose our compass till we don't know where we're headed to and where we came from. Therefore, disbelievers need to know Allah Azza wa Jal so that they can answer these lingering questions they have in their chests. Wallahi, and I swear by Allah, once disbelievers know about Allah, they will have no other choice but to accept Islam and surrender their will to Allah. Why? Because all those who are non-Muslims, all those who are disbelievers, have lost their compass. And hence, they claim to be atheists, Jews, Christians. They claim to be free thinkers, but actually they are enslaved in one form or the other. They are enslaved to other gods who are not worthy of being worshipped, to their own whims and desires, so that it drives them where it wishes, to their lusts, to their demons, and all such types of worship, all such type of slavery to such things would only darken your chest, harden your heart, fill it with depression, stress, despair. It would make it void of knowing Allah, but filled with all evil and demons that can possibly inhabit it. Therefore, there's no salvation, none whatsoever, except by knowing Allah. And this does not only address the disbelievers, also the believers, the Muslims, who are sinners, who feel the void and the emptiness, yet they fill it with music, with movies, with following their whims and desires, with worldly matters. So they're addicted to it. And they cannot stay for 5 to 10 minutes straight without doing any of these things that fills temporarily this void and emptiness in themselves. That's why they're always depressed. They have confusion in their lives. They have panic attacks. They have anxiety attacks. And they cannot sedate all of this except with worldly matters, which gives them temporarily enjoyment or satisfaction. But it is never everlasting. The real true believers who have the knowledge of Allah in their heart, they're the happiest people on earth. Like one of them said, by Allah, if the kings, the sons of kings, were to know the enjoyment and the comfort we have in our hearts, they would have fought us over it with swords, wanting to get it from us. This content, this satisfaction is not temporary. It is not worldly driven. It is oriented from knowing Allah Azza wa Jal and knowing ourselves as His servants and slaves. It is knowing how proud, how honorable, how great Allah is, and how humble, how poor, how in need we are. So when you study this beautiful science, which is, by the way, so important that people don't even realize this. Imagine if you open the Quran. Everybody has a copy of the Quran. Open it. Read it from cover to cover. What will you find? You will find that the beautiful names and attributes of Allah Azza wa Jal far exceed the amount of the description of paradise, of hell, of this or of that. It is filled in every single page. Talking about what? Talking about Allah the Almighty. This is more important than fiqh. This is more important than tafsir. This is more important than seerah. This is the core of aqeedah, to know Allah Azza wa Jal. Imagine the greatest surah in the Quran, the greatest by far, is Al-Fatiha. What does it talk about? الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين. The first three verses praise Allah Azza wa Jal and they describe Allah to us. The greatest verse ever in the Quran, the greatest verse, is Ayatul Kursi. What is it about? The description of Allah Azza wa Jal. Surah Al-Ikhlas, chapter 112, Surah Qul Huwa Allahu Ahad. What does it talk about? Nothing except Allah's description. And it is equivalent to one third of the Quran, as the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam. One third. This four ayahs, surah. Qul Huwa Allahu Ahad, Allahu Samad, Lam Yalid Walam Yulad, Walam Yakun Lahu Kufuwan Ahad. How ignorant are we when it comes to Allah's beautiful names and attributes? How ignorant are we if someone were to give us an A4 page and says, fill in the names of Allah Azza wa Jal that you memorize. If we can do one or half line, Alhamdulillah. But if someone would to tell us, write the name of Manchester United players, or Liverpool, or Real Madrid, or whatever, write the top 10 box office movies of this year or the past year, we would be more than thrilled to do this. But why? Because this is what fills our hearts. If your heart was filled with Allah's beautiful names and attributes, your life wouldn't be like this. Wallahi, you would not even have any signs of depression or anxiety or any displeasure, because you have the most valuable science in your heart. And this is why it is extremely important to learn this beautiful science. Now, if I were to try to give you this science according to the academic norms and to research it and to present it to you, that would take me a full year maybe or more, because we have to talk about what the names mean and what the attributes mean and what's the difference between both of them. And we have to talk in depth about the sifat, as-sifah, the attribute of Allah Azza wa Jal, and which can be according to his actions or to himself, al-dhatiyya wal-fi'liyya. And we have to talk about so many aspects that would take us a long time. But due to the time limitation of the program and due to the limitation of the few days in Ramadan that we have this schedule to, I thought that inshallah we would first of all talk about the benefits of learning this beautiful science, and then we would go directly to mentioning and listing the beautiful names of Allah Azza wa Jal and give a short description, so that when you go through it in the Quran or in the Sunnah, you have some connection. So you understand what the name means, not by just hearing the name and not knowing what it actually means. So what are the benefits of this beautiful science? First of all, knowing the beautiful names of Allah Azza wa Jal is one of the routes that would lead you to paradise. Is that so?
Yep.
The Prophet says, alayhi salatu wasalam, and the hadith is in Sahih al-Bukhari, so it is top in authenticity. The Prophet says, alayhi salatu wasalam, Allah has 99 names, 100 less one or minus one. Whoever learns them will enter paradise. Whoever learns them will enter paradise. Okay, one question, Sheikh. These 99 names, 100 less one, Does this mean that Allah's beautiful names are limited to 99? And question two, why so many names to Allah Azza wa Jal? And question three, what is meant by learning them? Akhi, you ask so many questions, but we will try to solve or answer them to the best of my ability. First of all, are Allah's beautiful names limited in 99? The answer is no. The hadith states that whoever learns these 99 names, he will enter Jannah. It doesn't say that Allah has only 99 names. It's like when I say, I have 100 euros ready for charity. This doesn't mean that these are the only euros I have. I may have millions, but these 100 are the ones that I'm dedicating for sadaqah, for charity. And likewise, 99 names are not limiting Allah's names. And by the way, I've been to many houses where I find a portrait of the beautiful names of Allah Azza wa Jal. And when you ask the people, where did you get this from? They would say that this is found in Sunan al-Tirmidhi, and the hadith is mentioned. But all the scholars of hadith state that this hadith is extremely weak and it's not authentic. And Ibn Taymiyyah says there is not a single hadith where the Prophet ﷺ lists the beautiful names of Allah Azza wa Jal. So the hadith, which most people consider to be authentic, in some copies of the Quran may have it at the end of it, naming that Allah Azza wa Jal, beautiful names are so and so. The hadith is not authentic due to Al-Walid ibn Muslim, who is not authentic according to the scholars of hadith. And in addition, there are many names of Allah Azza wa Jal that are not included. The most famous is Rabb. In the 99 names, you don't find Ar-Rabb. And we know that Rabb is one of the beautiful names of Allah. And most du'as in the Quran, Rabbana zalamna anfusana, Rabbana atina fi dunya hasana, and so on. So most of the du'as in the Quran, they begin with Rabbana. And Rabb is not found in the 99. Al-Hannan, Al-Mannan, this is also from authentic hadith. Al-Shafi is in the authentic hadith. Al-Jamil, Al-Witr, Inna Allah witrun yuhibbul, and so I'm not going to go into details, but these 99 names do not limit Allah's beautiful names. Okay, do you have any other evidence? Yes, in a very long hadith, the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, in his dua, I ask you by every name belonging to you, which you have named yourself with, or revealed in your book, or you taught to any of your creation, to any of your servants, or you have preserved in the knowledge of the unseen with you. What does that mean? It means that Allah's beautiful names are unlimited. Either He named Himself with, and we all know what He named Himself by, or revealed it in His book, in the Quran. So the names are revealed in Allah's book. Or you taught to any of your humans, to your servants, meaning the names that the Prophet told us about, alayhi salam, or other prophets may have known. Finally, you have preserved in the knowledge of the unseen with you. What does that mean? It means that Allah Azza wa Jal has names we are not aware of. So to limit Allah's names to 99 is totally wrong. And hence, this is why we need to expand our knowledge about Allah's beautiful names and that they are not excluded and limited to 99. These 99, we will try to gather from here and there whatever we can from the authentic Sunnah so that we can learn them in order to enter Jannah. But what does learning them mean? Okay. Learning them means, one, to count them. Allah, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim, Al-Malik, Al-Quddus, Al-Salam, and we go on. So we know them all by the numbers. We know that maybe we'll count 100, maybe we'll count 110, who knows? So this is part one of learning them. Part two, knowing what they mean. Someone comes to you and says to you, Allah's name is Muqit. What does Muqit mean? I don't know. What does Mateen mean? Al-Razzaq dhul quwwati al-Mateen. I don't know. So you have to learn the meaning. And this is what we'll try to do in this series. We'll try to list the name, where it's found, how authentic it is, what does it mean, what did the scholars say it means, and if we can get some of the benefits of learning it, that would be a bonus, inshallah. So counting them, two, knowing what they mean, three, implementing them. What do you mean by implementing them? It means that some of Allah's beautiful names can be implemented by the humans in themselves. So Allah is merciful, Rahim, and He orders us to be also merciful. Allah is Rafiq, kind, and He tells us to be kind. Allah is Kareem, generous, and He also ordered us to be generous, and so on. So this is one way of implementing Allah's beautiful names. Also, part of implementing them is to ask Allah Azza wa Jal whenever you want something that can be related to His name. So if you want Allah's mercy, you say, Ya Rahman, Irhamni. Oh, the most merciful, have mercy upon me. It wouldn't be appropriate to say, Ya Jabbar, Irhamni. It wouldn't be appropriate to say, Ya Aziz, Irhamni. Because these attributes relate to Allah's power and might. So you don't ask forgiveness by calling Him with these names. And likewise, when you want victory upon the enemies of Islam, you don't say, Ya Ghafoor, O most forgiving, grant us victory over the enemies. This is mocking Allah Azza wa Jal. You use the term Ya Aziz, Ya Jabbar, Ya Qawi, grant us victory over our enemies, because this is related to what you're asking. You want provision, you ask with Ya Razzaq Rizqni, and so on. So this is learning them, knowing them, counting them, knowing what they mean, implementing them by either calling Allah Azza wa Jal or having these attributes in your life and doing what Allah loves of them. The second benefit of learning this science is that without it, you cannot know Allah. So many people come and say, Shaykh, we do not find khushu' in salat. We don't have concentration in salat. We're always negligent, absent-minded when we make dhikr. Why is that? The answer is very easy. Because you do not know who you are worshipping. Knowing Allah Azza wa Jal is divided into two types. And it can be looked at from various angles. But one of the types is that is shared by Muslims and non-Muslims, by sinners and righteous people. And that is to acknowledge there is a God, to acknowledge there is Allah, the Almighty, who created the universe. Everybody knows this. So this is part of knowing Allah, but this is general. There is this specific type of knowledge of Allah Azza wa Jal that can only be given to those who know His beautiful names and attributes, which would make them bashful of Allah, which would make their hearts connected and related to Allah, always looking up to Allah Azza wa Jal and to the day they meet Him. And there is nothing more important for a soul than to know Allah Azza wa Jal, the Creator, as Ibn al-Qayyim says. There is no way to acknowledge and recognize your Lord without knowing His beautiful names and attributes. The more you know, the more you are closer to Allah Azza wa Jal. You're seeking Him subhanahu wa ta'ala and you're striving for that. And the more you are ignorant of Allah's beautiful names and attributes, the further you are, the more ignorant of Allah, the more resentment you feel when you're called to come closer or to do any sort of good deeds. Thirdly, knowing Allah's beautiful names is the origin of all forms of worship. So if someone comes to you in Islam and says, what is the origin of worshipping Allah? No one would doubt saying Tawheed. Without Tawheed, there is no knowledge of Allah and there is no worshipping of Allah. And we know that nowadays these new students of knowledge, new da'is, new trend in America and Europe who deny the importance of Tawheed. And some of them even go to the extent of rejecting the concept of the name and it says, where is Tawheed mentioned in the Quran? And this shows you how ignorant people can be, regardless of their fame. Allah Azza wa Jal ordered us in the Quran of Tawheed. He said, no, I want to see the word Tawheed. Well, in Sahih al-Imam Muslim, and also in al-Bukhari, when the Prophet ﷺ sent Mu'adh ibn Jabal to Yemen, he said, let it be the first thing you call them to is Tawheed of Allah Azza wa Jal. Ayyuwahidullah. So the Prophet himself used the terminology of Tawheed, the oneness of Allah Azza wa Jal. And this is the mother of all sciences. And no form of worship would be accepted without the proper Tawheed intact and found. Otherwise, there is no point in having it. Without Tawheed, who are you worshipping? Yes, you're praying, you're fasting, you're performing Hajj, you're giving zakat. To whom? If you do not know Allah Azza wa Jal, if you do not have Tawheed, and this is an essential part of your aqidah, of your conviction, without Tawheed, if you're doubtful of whom you're worshipping, you don't know His description, you don't know His names, why are you doing what you're doing? He says, well, everybody's fasting, so I'm fasting. But seriously, I don't believe in this being controlling the universe. Then you're a kafir, with all due respect, or without respect. If you don't have the conviction of Allah, the knowledge of Allah, the tawheed of Allah, and I'm not talking about tawheed al-uluhiyyah, the tawheed of Lord worship, or tawheed al-rububiyyah, tawheed of lordship, or tawheed al-asma wa-sifat, which we are talking about at the moment. I'm talking about tawheed in general. You have to have this in order for you to be accepted. Now, I don't know what is the status with the control room about the questions and answers. So should we continue or do we have a break? I presume that we should continue until I am given a notice, because I believe that we're supposed to have like 10 or 15 minutes remaining for the questions and answers. But I hope that everything is going fine. Fourthly, among the benefits of studying Allah's beautiful names is that your dua is accepted. If you study the names of Allah and understand them, then your dua will be accepted. Allah Azza wa Jal says, وَلِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى. Allah has the most beautiful names. So, call upon Him by them. This is Allah's order for you, to call upon Him by the names, His names. And He promised us that if we were to call Him, then we are to be responded and answered. And as I said, Allah Azza wa Jal loves to be called by His names. And this is what the Prophet used to say, alayhi salam, in his dua. He used to praise Allah by His beautiful names and attributes. He says, Allahumma ya hayyu ya qayyum bi rahmatika astaghith. O Allah, all living, the sustainer, in your mercy I seek refuge. So the Prophet praises Allah by His beautiful names. And this shows you that he also asks Allah, I ask you by every name belonging to you, which you have named yourself with, or revealed in your book, or you taught to any of your creation, or you have preserved in the knowledge of the unseen with you. So this is what Allah Azza wa Jal ordered us to do, and this is what Allah Subhanahu wa Ta'ala will respond to us. So I think that we don't have a break, and we will go straight to the questions. So we have Mehwish from the US.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Can we ask two questions or one?
You're calling from America. It's a long way. Make it two, but quick, please.
Okay. First question. Can I combine past mandatory fasts to the fast of Ramadan, or also likewise sunnah fast? Can we combine the sunnah fast to the mandatory or to the Ramadan fast?
Number two.
Upon whom can we say alayhi salam or radiallahu anhu or rahimallah? Jazakumullahu khayran.
Wa jazakum. And we have Mu'izz from India.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Assalamualaikum.
Sheikh, since the COVID vaccines are out, if a person takes the vaccine while fasting in the month of Ramadan, does his fast be invalidated? Jazakumullah khair.
Wa jazakum. And we have Ishaq from India.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Assalamualaikum.
So, Sheikh, if a person does not remember who narrated the hadith and does not remember the hadith word by word, but knows what the hadith talks about, is it okay for him to convey it to other people in his own words?
Are you referring to hadith or Quran?
Hadith.
Okay, I will answer, inshallah. We have Rashid from Tunisia.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Assalamualaikum. Allah.
I'm confused about something.
Yes, sir.
Why I go here, I find people who studied Islam for years, but they're doing bid'ahs. And many of them are imams. I never studied fiqh or anything, but it's clear to me that what they're doing is wrong. And when I speak against this, people get angry and criticize me like I'm the one who is misguided. I don't understand how could laymen like me know that all of these stupid things are bid'ahs, where the sheikhs and imams here are doing it like it is sunnah or wajib.
Okay, I will answer you, inshallah. Aftab from India.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am 21 years old, and for a long time I'm tackling the issue of Sunni and Wahhabi. I asked my elder that what's the difference between two, and the conclusion was they saw their forefathers following something, so they are following the same. And the issue is so much that the Sunni Hafizs that do not read the meaning of the ayah of the Quran, which is translated by a Wahhabi scholar, or vice versa.
Okay. I will answer you, inshallah. So we have 8 minutes and we have 5 questions. Mehwish from US, question number one. Can we combine with Ramadan previous mandatory fasts, like previous Ramadan that we missed, or expiation fasts, or oath that I made? The answer is no. there is nothing to be combined with Ramadan. Ramadan overrules all. And you cannot combine two mandatory acts in one. This would not make it possible. So today is Monday. Today is Tuesday. The first day of Ramadan in Saudi Arabia. And I would like to combine to it in the intention, the expiation of an oath I broke. I don't have money, so I have to fast 3 days. So I'll combine it with this one. And I missed one day while traveling 3 years ago in a previous Ramadan. This doesn't work at all. What is mandatory has to be isolated from everything else that is mandatory like it. Now, if it was the other way around, if I were to make up a missed day of Ramadan on a Monday, a missed day of Ramadan, not during Ramadan, after Ramadan, I'd make it up on a Monday. Yes, I'll get two birds with one stone, making up for the missed day and fasting Ramadan. Fasting Monday. But you cannot combine two obligatory acts in one. And as for the second question, who should we say alayhi salam? Alayhi salam can be used with anybody. So you can say Mehwish alayhi salam, Asim alayhi salam. There's no problem in that. There's no restriction. It's dua. So there's no problem in that. Unfortunately, later somewhere down the line, this was preserved for messengers and prophets and angels and righteous people. So when we say Maryam, the mother of Jesus, we say Maryam alayhi salam. When we mention the name of Jibril, we say Jibril alayhi salam. When we say Adam alayhi salam, all prophets and messengers, the prophet, our prophet Muhammad alayhi salam, we say alayhi salam or alayhi salatu wassalam, which is the best and the most appropriate. Later down the line, in some of the late generations, they associated it with Ahlul Bayt. So the Rafida Shia, whenever they say Ja'far al-Baqir alayhi salam, or al-Husayn ibn Ali, they would say alayhima as-salam, Fatima alayha as-salam. And this is inappropriate. One would say, oh, we know that Imam Bukhari mentioned in one of his narrations that Ali alayhi salam and Fatima alayha as-salam. This is one single narration. And it's not the trend. It could have been a mistake. It could have been an error made by one of the scribes who copied the Bukhari and he added it instead of writing radiyallahu anhuma, because we know that radiyallahu is what the majority of Ahl Sunnah attach to the names of the companions. So it should be like this. But if someone says alayhi salam, we say Ali and Fatima alayhim salam, as well as Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman alayhim salam. There's no problem in that. But to only single out Ahlul Bayt with alayhi salam and no one else, no, this is an innovation and Allah knows best. Muiz from India says, what's the ruling on taking the vaccine of COVID-19 while fasting? This has no problem over your fasting. Your fasting is valid. You can do it without an issue. Ishaq from India, he says, what's the ruling on narrating or reading a hadith by the meaning and not by the actual words? It's an issue of dispute. Some scholars say that this is not permissible, because in the hadith of Al-Bara ibn Azib, may Allah be pleased with him, when he was taught by the Prophet ﷺ the dua to say before going to bed, after making wudu and sleeping on your right side, the Prophet told him ﷺ to say at the end, آمنت بكتابك الذي أنزلت وبنبيك الذي أرسلت. I believe in the book you have revealed and in your prophet you had sent. Now, prophet, sent. So Bara ibn Azib repeated the whole dua, but at the end he said, وَبِرَسُولِكَ الَّذِي أَرْسَلْتِ. I believe in the book that you have revealed and by the messenger you had sent, because sent is more associated to messengers. So the Prophet corrected him and said to him, no, by the and in the Prophet you had sent, not the messenger. Which led some scholars to say, We have to stop exactly at the specific word that was used in the hadith, and we cannot mention it by the meaning. But the vast majority of scholars say that it is permissible for someone who knows the meaning of the hadith truly. So if I know the hadith truly and understand it and rephrase it or translate it into English, that would be fine, inshallah, because I have knowledge and I'm conveying what was the intention of the Prophet ﷺ. Sometimes, and this was, and I told this so many times, in America, I was reading a hadith that was translated by one of the imams there. And this is the best that the imam could do, but this is wrong. The hadith of the seven who are martyred other than those who die on the battlefield. Among them, the word is al-mat'oon. Al-mat'oon can mean the one who was stabbed with a knife, but also it means, and this is what the hadith is referring to, the one who dies with the plague. So the gentleman translated it to the one who was stabbed. Imagine me reading this hadith, not knowing any better. Someone comes to mug me with a knife and he says, give me a wallet or I'll stab you and kill you. He said, no, go ahead and stab me. I'd like to die as a martyr. This is not true. Well, this is what he translated to. So saying it with the meaning is permissible if you know the meaning. Rashid from Tunisia, why do people who are knowledgeable, who've studied Islam, fall into bid'ah? There are many reasons, Rashid. First of all, praise Allah, Ahmed Allah, that He made you upon the sunnah and that He showed you bid'ah from non-bid'ah. Secondly, lots of these people are ignorant, though they have bachelor degrees and masters and maybe PhDs, but they're ignorant because they're blind followers of what they've read and studied, not what Islam is truly about from the Quran and Sunnah. Thirdly, a lot of them are making money from their congregation with these bid'ah. So the laymen love these innovations and these mystic Sufi stuff, and they don't want to change to proper Islam. So they follow their congregation and let the flock follow them, and this is why they feel angry, and may Allah guide them all. Finally, Aftab from India, he wants to know the difference between Sunni and Wahhabi, and some of the Hafiz tell him, do not read the interpretation of a Wahhabi. Akhi, all those who talk ill about Wahhabi, though we don't have a sect called Wahhabi, but my teaching classifies me as a Wahhabi. So anyone who talks ill about Wahhabism or Sheikh Muhammad bin Abdul Wahhab or his books, he is someone who's deviant, either a super Sufi or a Rafida Shi'i or someone who is deviant, Mu'tazili or Ash'ari or whatever, following these deviant sects. This is why they don't like the mainstream of Islam that is following the footsteps of the Prophet ﷺ, the favorite generations of the companions, the tabi'een and the tabi'at tabi'een. This is all what Wahhabism is. And if you study their books, you will find that it fits as a glove to the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ and to the correct aqeedah and the pure aqeedah of the favorite generations. This is all the time we have until we meet tomorrow, inshallah, same time. I leave you fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
ولله الأسماء الحسنى فادعوه بها وذروا الذين يلحدون في أسمائه سيجزون ما كانوا يعملون